Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Bad Voltage. This is season 3, episode 72. We're on a challenging 3-episode-a-year routine at this point.
But still have not pod-faded.
So we have not pod-faded. At this point, like, we're going to be like 90 with walking sticks and grey beards.
I'm recording episode 74, yeah.
Actually, that's a good point. I'm here with Mr. Stuart Ian Langridge, the king of Birmingham, Mr. Jeremy Beyonce Garcia, the king of New York, and myself. So, Langridge, what are we going to talk about today?
So, the thing I thought was interesting is, like, literally yesterday, so this is actually up-to-date news, as opposed to normally we talk about something where it was up-to-date when I thought of it and now it's a month later, right? This is actually pretty up-to-date news. The OpenSSF, the Open Source Security Foundation, who are, I'm not sure, I don't think they're responsible for, but they're speaking out about all the package repositories for different languages. So you know how each programming language has basically a big library of libraries, stuff you can download. So at NPM for Node.js, PyPy for Python, crates.io, Packagist for PHP, all that kind of thing, right? Since the beginning of these things, they've always been run on a bit of a wing and a prayer, and someone spun up a thing for a laugh in an afternoon, and now it's a major league thing. And there was a stage where people were like, ah, here's a thing. We could, like, make a company about this and then take it public and maybe make some money or something like that, whatever. But the point is, even now, they are surviving on whatever tuppences they can find to rub together. And at the same time, the amount of companies who are using software and drawing from these things is going up and up and up and up. And OpenSSF's point is this is basically completely unsustainable. So for some of these things that a big company has stepped in and gone, we'll do that, we're going to pay for it. But that's not great. In general, right? They don't have diverse funding sources, and it's a problem. And OpenSSF's point is, not only is this a problem, it's going to be a lot bigger problem when they all fall over and none of you can deploy any frigging software anymore. So I think it's an interesting... I got a bunch of thoughts about, you know, the technology of this and some of the sustainability of this and so on and so forth. One thing we're not going to talk about, those of you who are Ruby people will be aware that there is a great deal of furore going on in the last few days about specifically Ruby's version of this. There's Ruby Central, the organization, the Ruby Central, the downloadable archive thing, but there's also the Ruby Central source code, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on around that. We're not getting into that because none of us know enough about it to stick our oar in, basically.
It's never stopped us in the past.
No, but this is the thing we're talking about here is the big picture, long-term sustainability of this kind of thing rather than specifically Ruby drama in the last week. So the point is, you know, we're aware of this, but that's not the point of the discussion. This discussion would still be valid even if that hadn't happened.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. I mean, you tell me this. I don't think anyone would think, no, what we've got is a perfectly sustainable, reasonable thing to do. That's how we should do it. But does anything come of this?
It's really, I mean, this has always been the big risk with open source, isn't it? If you're building software that then hundreds of thousands of companies are depending on, by definition, these projects become seen as commoditized in nature, then companies generally don't want to fund commoditized things. So when, like, Kubernetes first came out, a bunch of companies wrapped around it and started investing money in it because it was, like, a really interesting key element of what they were doing. But this has basically turned into that XKCD of that one guy in Nebraska who's maintaining that piece and everything's kind of sitting on top of it.
Yeah.
Because the software becomes so useful, it becomes commoditized in the eyes of people, but it's it's not a commodity. Well, it kind of is, but it's not. It's a crucial commodity that then if no one maintains it, it becomes a huge problem. So to me, the only solution to this is you've got to have an incentive structure that incentivizes those people to put money into
What does the incentive structure look like?
I don't know.
I mean, because a lot of people are like, yeah, there should be some kind of incentive to do this. But I literally cannot think of a way which does not involve something like, I want to check out a Node.js project and I've got to pay 4 pence to do so.
I mean, I think we should start with what the OpenSSF statement was, and the salient point they bolded is, despite the importance of all this infrastructure, they're often maintained, operated, and funded in ways that rely on goodwill rather than mechanisms that align with responsibility with usage. And I think that we probably all agree with.
Yes.
What's more fascinating, I think, when you really think through the history of some of this, is that Maven, PyPI, Crates, Package, all of them actually exist and work pretty reliably.
Yeah.
I think that's more surprising than that there's an issue now, is that there hasn't been a bigger issue yet.
Yeah, it's a good point, you know.
Because they're struggling along on goodwill.
And
there's a lot of stuff which can go an awfully long way based on goodwill, because people believe in what they're doing. There's a duty to keep doing what they're doing. Even if you came to them now and said, okay, look at what you're doing now today, would you have opted to do that if you weren't doing it yesterday? And they'd be like, shit, no, I wouldn't. No, this is a disaster, but I can't walk away now, otherwise this falls over. I have a responsibility.
And this falls into the less fun part of open source, in that it's infrastructure, it's services. It's not the fun of writing a crate and releasing it and maintaining it and releasing it to the world. It's the distribution of that stuff. And that's, unless you're really into infrastructure, is a less fun and certainly not as high profile of a problem to solve.
And even if you are into infrastructure, you can be just as into the infrastructure when there are 10,000 downloads a day, right? You can think about that and go, how can we make this good? When it goes from 10,000 downloads a day to 10 million or 10,000 million downloads a day, your job doesn't get any more interesting. It just gets a lot more expensive.
Yep.
So
I wonder whether, like, to me, so I think we all agree this is a problem. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
You know, this is an inflection point. It's not necessarily a crisis right now, but it's going to get worse unless it's addressed in some way. What's interesting to me is I do think it's an incentive issue. Like, there are a subset of people out there who basically will just witter away at companies, expecting them to pay for something. And I think that will get you so far. There'll be some companies like, we feel a moral responsibility to...
They're essentially doing it out of goodwill.
Right, exactly. But I think most companies aren't going to be like that. And it's going to be very difficult for, even if there are good people within companies who want to do that, them getting the approval from their bosses to, you know, deploy the money in that way.
And approval for how long?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to be like, it's going to be easier for the bigger companies, people like Intel and Oracle and whatever else, to be able to do this than an earlier startup who, you know, maybe hasn't raised any money or whatever. What's interesting to me is that when I think about the incentive model that companies have, so if you look at companies who, for example, who become members of the CNCF or the Linux Foundation or whatever, I think a lot of the reason why they become members is because they want visibility in those areas and in those communities. They want some kind of record. They're basically, in many cases, like brand visibility and lead generation. And I wonder whether one area of exploration here could be, how do you connect those needs with generating money and some of that money going towards the projects? And because I think the ideal scenario is whoever the maintainer of these projects, they should be hired full time working on these projects. Like, that would be the ideal scenario. They hire the experts to write the software.
Hired by who is the point?
By someone like the OpenSSF or someone else. I don't know. But my point is that I wonder if there is a way in which the companies who want the brand recognition and the lead generation, whatever else, can get what they want, and that the money that goes towards unlocking that is going towards supporting these projects. I mean, it's just an idea, but like, I think that has to be the solution that needs to be found for this to be solved in any meaningful way.
The OpenSSF haven't got the money, right?
Well,
It would have to be part of their mandate for them to get the money.
Yeah, but so then my question doesn't become who employs the developers who build Packagist and PyPy and whatever, because sure, the answer is the OpenSSF, but they're essentially a holding organization. Who pays for the OpenSSF? This is exactly the same problem, right? There's no difference between the OpenSSF, you know, someone needs to hire them directly and have them work on it, or someone needs to pay the OpenSSF to hire them to work on it. It's still the same thing. Everyone agrees someone should be paying people to work on PyPy or Packagist. Just no one wants to be the people paying. Everyone wants someone else to do it.
But there is people that work on PyPI. They work for PSF.
Yeah, but not enough.
That exists.
Yeah. There are people who work for NPM. There are people who work for NPM Inc., owned by Microsoft, right?
Right.
That happens, but there's not enough money going in because almost everyone uses it for free and the amount it uses goes up.
I think the solution to this, in my mind, is you have like a third party, you have an intermediary, whether it's the OpenSSF or the Python Foundation or whatever. And the problem is that I think a lot of these organizations, I think it's less so in the Linux Foundation world, but if you look at people like the Python Foundation or other foundations, they tend to operate on donations.
Yes.
And generous grants from organizations. And the problem with that is it goes back to our problem with goodwill, right? To me, there's got to be, the ideal solution here is that there is a model where companies get what they want and some of that money then goes towards hiring these people. So like magical world, I could imagine, you know, that there have been some of these projects that if Google can pay, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever, and it gives them more visibility in certain areas that they care about, that then some of that money, not necessarily all of it, then goes towards essentially paying some of these developers. So long as there's companies who want those outcomes and there's money coming in.
Google would say they are doing that. And so would a bunch of other companies, right? I mean, a bunch of big companies, right. They are putting, it's not like the PSF get money by finding it on the floor, right? They get corporate sponsorships. That's how they get the money.
Yep.
But they've not got enough.
Why have they not got enough then?
Because no one has to pay.
Right. But we can't have a world where people have to pay.
Agreed, which is why I don't know what the answer to this is.
I think you have to create the right incentive model for companies to give you money. And goodwill doesn't work, as we all know, and we all agree.
Sure, yes.
Well, the problem with goodwill is it does work right up until it doesn't.
That's a fair way of describing it.
Yeah.
I agree. It can work. In fact, it can work really well.
Yeah, and for a fairly long time. Which is what makes it a little brittle, because when it doesn't, there's no backup plan and there is no resiliency. It's just gone.
Honestly, I think some of it is that all of this stuff has basically been grandfathered in from a world 10, maybe 15 years ago, when you could spin up something like this, you know, on your DigitalOcean droplet and everyone could use it. And it's just got bigger and bigger and bigger and people are more and more dependent on it. We've built language systems which essentially assume that there is a 24/7 running completely reliable place to download libraries from the whole time, whether that's GitHub or whether it's PyPy or whatever. You know, every time you run an NPM project in every time you run a node project in CI, a lot of places just go and get the packages from NPM again because it's not a problem to do that. Maybe there's a bunch of techie people out there going, well, we shouldn't be doing that. Everyone should be writing everything in C. Well, shut up. But the point is, I think some of the, I don't even mean the technology, I mean the mindset is grandfathered in from 15 years ago. And since then, there's a lot less goodwill because now some people are making a bunch of money out of this. And so everyone else is like, no, we want to make a bunch of money too. Or they've gone, we've spent 15 years funding this, for which we've got all the goodwill benefits and brand visibility we're going to get out of it at this point. We're either going to stop doing it or someone's going to defray the expenses for us.
I think what you actually need here, and the problem with this approach is it'd be wildly complicated and takes too many very large players to cooperate that may not. But there's three parts of the problem if you look at it, right? There's the humans to work on the infrastructure. There's the infrastructure cost itself. And then there's the very real security concerns involved with a lot of production systems pull from these places. So what you really need is to enable the Rust Foundation, PSF, etc., to hire the right amount of people. a group, yes. a separate foundation, I think, that's really probably just the three hyperscalers and maybe Cloudflare, some others that say, okay, these are critical to the internet. We just provide free infrastructure and figure that piece out. And then something like OpenSSF to collaborate on the security piece. But that requires three foundations to work together in a way that's very complicated and probably not possible.
But that
would be the ideal, right? If you look at it from first principles, like that's where you would land.
Yeah, if a duck flew in the window and gave us that, that would be brilliant. I don't know how you get there from here.
I mean, I think you have two of them. The OpenSSF is pretty well funded and motivated to fix just the security portion. I think most of these large languages have a reasonably well-funded foundation, certainly Rust, certainly Python. Yeah.
But part some of the thing, if you look at, say, the recent NPM thing, right, someone's account got compromised, someone they uploaded, I think, a Bitcoin miner or something like that.
It was a Bitcoin
wallet stealer or something like that. And because it was low-level package that a million things depend on, it was identified as a problem in about like 3-4 hours. But people are like, well, it was not identified beforehand. That's terrible. It took ages. It compromised loads of systems. And the NPM people are like, okay, if you want us to monitor every package upload every time one happens, we're going to need like 15 times as many people as we've got. We don't have that. We can't do that. And that's the kind of thing people are talking about. OpenSSF flagging this is more like, essentially, as you said, things like the infrastructure are currently being provided by Goodwill. You know, it costs a bunch of money. It costs a bunch more money than it used to. And presumably there's a bunch of companies out there sitting there going, okay, we're funding this. We're paying for all the servers that run, I don't know, PyPI or Maven or whatever. What are we actually getting out of this?
Yeah.
Because our competitors are using all the packages that they're downloading from our thing, and they're not paying for any of it.
What's interesting to me about this and other topics like this is that the money is there. It's out there. Like, I don't believe that we have a problem where the money doesn't exist to pay these developers to do this and to solve this problem. The money's out there. I think there are companies who have budget allocated to it's allocated to different areas, whether it's marketing or growth or developer engagement, whatever. It's just connecting the money in such a way that it can go in and fund this. And I think we've often looked at this from a to your point, like from a goodwill perspective, like, oh, let's just, you know, I don't want to diminish the work that foundations in the past have done. By saying this, but you know, the easy, obvious approach is, yeah, we'll accept donations, right? It seems to me that today we need to, you know, maybe it's that that, you know, when a company is the outcome they want is awareness or brand building or whatever, that there's a relationship between these foundations who run these projects and maybe, I don't know, PR companies, right? So when you fund this, you know, that. Imagine, this is obviously a silly idea, but imagine if you're a big company or a smaller company, but you've got some money, you've raised venture funding or something like that, and you can pay money where some of that money is going to go towards funding these engineers, but then it guarantees you a spot on the front page of Hacker News. I think tons of people would pay for that.
I think tons of people would pay for it for 9 months, and then everyone would go, okay, we're going to stop reading that now because it's entirely full of vendor spots. Think about going to conferences where the corporate sponsors of the conference get to do a talk. How many of those conferences have you enjoyed? Where it's full of vendor pitches. That's what it is.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. The only point I'm trying to make is that I think when you incentivize, when you connect what people want to generating money that goes to what we need, I think there is a solution out there. The Hacker News example is just, my point is that...
Sure, I'll tell you point.
I think there's a way to do this, but I just don't know what the... It would need like a very nuanced way in which it would work. For all the points you raise, Zach, like, yeah, you don't want Hacker News filled with bullshit vendor posts, right?
It sounds like
I just think there's... I do. Well, I want it, obviously. So, yeah. It's interesting, though, because I think if we'd have had this conversation 10 years ago, we would have been much more on the how do we generate more goodwill train.
Yes.
And I think we've shifted our mindsets quite a bit because we're old men.
I am fascinated to know what the Stuart Langridge of 2015 would have had to say about this.
I don't know.
A lot of shouting.
The me of 2005 would be worse. I honestly don't know. Because the obvious solution is that the people who are making the most money out of this ought to bloody give some back, because it's pure tragedy of the commons, right? No one has to pay, so no one does. And then you can keep going. But if no one pays, the thing falls apart. That's what the tragedy of the commons is. But no one's come up with a better solution to this. The only solution, as far as I'm aware, we've come up with to solve tragedy of the commons problems is the one the government uses, which is tax, right? Which works. Mm.
The key distinction there, I think, is that in the eyes of these companies, they don't think they have to pay, because they look at it as this is open source.
Yeah.
And when they do, I think the lens that it's viewed through is, I use project X, Y, and Z. I'm going to fund X, Y, and Z. I'm going to fund the underlying infrastructure that handles distribution for X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. They focus on the things that are most relevant to them.
Yeah. They don't even fund the projects that they're using, all of whom are going, man, you took our thing, you deployed it to a million places, you got £100 million from it, and we didn't see dollar one, let alone the people who made it possible for you to download a zip file of it 80,000 times a day.
Right. So, I mean, even if just the hyperscalers got together and the registry was an intelligent registry that redirected you to the cloud you were on, the costs would immediately be cut to a fraction of what it is. And that wouldn't be that much work.
You can imagine a world in which that happens, yeah. It's a bit annoying because the harder core elements of the open source community, and this probably would have been me in 2010, would be going, well, the problem is that what you should be doing is building your own local cache of things and not downloading stuff every time. And like, but this should not be a problem that developers should have to solve.
Yeah.
In 1985, there wasn't this problem because you downloaded a thing when you needed it. You downloaded it once and then you jealously kept your CD. And if you lost it, you'd have to go and get a new one mailed to you in the post. So it didn't have this problem. But we do have fast, ubiquitous internet, right? It's the huge growth in our ability to build software that depends on other work that people have done is a good thing. It's not something that we go, well, because it's not sustainable, we'll turn it off. We want to find a way of making it work.
Yeah.
All right. It's an interesting one to solve. I think one thing we have to be a little careful of is not turning open source into unlimited PTO, where it's like, oh, you get unlimited PTO. But then there's all of these like secret hidden rules around how much time you should take off and how much time you shouldn't take off. Like, oh yeah, open source, it's available for everybody. You can use it, but you really need to give some money.
I've never understood unlimited paid time off. Why don't you just never go to work and get paid anyway?
Yeah, it does not work
like,
that way.
Yeah, but literally what stops you? It's unlimited.
People take less time off with unlimited PTO generally.
Well, this is why you are required to have 25 days a year here. Might be 20, actually. Yeah. But I've never understood. If they said, okay, you've got unlimited paid time off, I'd be like, okay, I'll see you in 12 months then. Keep paying my wages. Like, literally, what stops someone from doing that? Never understood.
Well, I think they trust people to be adults. Yeah. So, alrighty. Well, we would love to hear what you folks have to say about all of this. This is something that is rife with opinions. Obviously, ours are all correct. But you'll be curious to see what you peasants think as well.
I mean, yeah, are there people out? I've not heard anyone out there who is proposing a solution which seems like a good idea, and the problem is that they're not being heard enough, right? Yeah. Maybe there are some and we haven't heard them, so point us at people who are proposing actual answers for this, as long as the answer is not things like stop using NPM because there's loads of tiny JavaScript libraries or something, you know, actual answers for making this stuff sustainable.
Yeah.
Didn't like in the early days of the internet, Bill Gates proposed that like every email should be a cent?
That's what you need to do. Every download. It would stop spam.
Done.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, cheers, Bill. I'm sure you can afford it. But yes, so let us know what you think. I want to say thank you very much to Marius from Nerdzoo Media.
Yes, Marius. Thank you, Marius.
For mixing this very much. And one other thing, in case you don't know about it, you might want to check out neil.fung/not-a-robot, which is, it's a game.
Neil.fung-not-a-neal.
So not N-E-I-L, N-E-A-L.
Spells it wrong.
Dot fun.
Okay.
Slash not.
Fun.
Yeah, fun. Okay. Slash not a robot with dashes. It's basically a game of defeating captures, but it gets do you remember that password game where it started off going, you have to put in, you know, your password has to have a symbol in it, and then it has to have a number in it. And then it was like, now, but your password has to have a chicken in it and stuff like this, right? I think it might even have been the same guy. But it's the same idea. Give it a try, because loads of people have been playing it. It's really hard at the later levels. I'm like, I have not finished this. But now it can suck in all of you, just like it has for me. So enjoy that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm doing it right now.
I was going to say, a note, dear listener. When a presenter on Bad Voltage gives you a URL and you're at work, turn your speakers all the way up and ensure that you're on a Zoom while visiting said URL. I'm sure it will be great and safe for work every time.
No, I agree. Leave that motherfucker blue. That's what you should do with any links that kind of come from us.
I believe it's safe for work. I'm just not sure it's safe for your ability to do work, which is not the same thing.
On that bombshell.
All right.
Anyway,
peace out.
Fantastic. Cheers.
See ya.